listeners, to another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Kerner, speaking to you on the 27th. That's the 27th of July, 2005. Marathon broadcast tomorrow. I'm going to be doing my show and John Stadmiller's, apparently, 4 hours. And that should be rather interesting tomorrow. We do the best we can to connect the dots. I want to make sure that we all know, and I'm sure you do as well, that the people of all these countries that are in the news today just want to live their lives in peace and tranquility. They don't want to be maneuvered and manipulated like they are. And certainly I'm referring to Iraq right now, the people of Iraq, with this military going on, with the insurgents, where you really don't know who your enemy is. And that's where our troops are set up. Just like Vietnam and Korea. Of course, those were UN police actions. We should have taken care of communist China back in Korea's day, 1951, 50. But it was never designed to do that. So communism was designed to be flourishing to the day that we live today. That's the way I see it. And certainly I see that Iraq wants quick withdrawal of U.S. troops. And you can't blame them at this stage if you're a sovereign country. Of course, sovereignty is only under the guise of the United Nations system, as they call it, sovereignty. The IMF is in control of the wealth of Iraq because of our military in that portion of the world. We are maneuvered and manipulated on a constant basis. We have the situation in America, the Sovietization of America right now. We are losing our sovereignty. We've lost our sovereignty. NAFTA is extended to CAFTA, is extended to FTAA. All it is just to regionalize the entire North American continent under Soviet system. Sovietization of the North American continent. NAFTA has to be stopped. CAFTA can't go on. FTAA is only the extension to South America. So when you understand that the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, or Tariffs and Trade, started in 1947 under the UN system, there's where you connect the dots to where we are today. The State Department is paramount in implementing these directions. The State Department is paramount in implementing Agenda 21. We'll cover some of this today, as Hanza can't be with us for an entire two-hour broadcast. He's a former Czechoslovakian defector from his country. Seeing what's happening in this country, realizing what happened in his country and his connections to that part of the world, where all the people want to do is live in peace and freedom. All people anywhere want to do is live in peace and freedom. It's the elite at the top that manipulate the armies and the militaries. And you think of China's military, you think of Russia's military, which has been propagandized to us that Russia's military is in a weakened state today. But the armaments that Russia supplies to communist China with 4 million strong of a manpower military is just ominous. You have Costco parts on the East Coast, West Coast, that's the combination, West Coast, Gulf of Mexico, Panama Canal control. Many indicators that we should be extremely concerned, listeners, and this is my point. We will bring Hanza Molina with us momentarily. Stay with us and support the network, please. Broadcast. The beginning of the broadcast called American Exposé, here reestablished on Republic Broadcasting. Most important for you to support this direction at this point in time, as they've had some turnbacks or setbacks, so to speak. You need to keep this thing rolling. John is doing his best, and so is Sandra and the staff at Republic Broadcasting. It is a staff that needs to be supported, as this is the best place to be to do the work that we need to do, listeners. There's no other place to be. I've researched it myself. I've gone to the point where a certain individual has set up a network for me to be doing my own network. And it's an impossibility to do for me. And John's done it. So you've got to support this, because if it doesn't continue, where are you going to go then, listeners? So that's the way I see it. Support this network financially right now, to where it will never have to be supported financially by you, except by the purchase of your products or the products that they offer on this network, the products that you will receive with your purchases in the future. Lots of directions to do that as well. Here we see, dated July 19th, there should be water, lots of it, but baked crack clay is all there is. The picture on our front page shows how critical the water supply has become after the driest winter and spring in east-west England in nearly 30 years. This comes from the Independent out of the UK. A water crisis in England, listeners. Is drought inducement being engineered all over the globe? I'm sorry to say it is. The InMod Treaty, the Environmental Modification Treaty from 1977, is a reality. Signed at the United Nations. Some signed it, some didn't. The CIA World Factbook will tell you what country signed this treaty, what country didn't sign this treaty. Every UN treaty but the countries sign and don't sign. But my big concern right now is the terrorism that's going on, and where's the blame going? And certainly we have Hansa with us. Hansa, can you hear me fine?
Sure. Yeah, hello.
Hello. Nice to have you with me again today, Hansa.
I'm glad to be here again. Let's do it.
We've got these situations today in the news that are very, very ominous. And, you know, we've been told the Soviet Union is has crumbled. And we obviously the strength in communist China when we go buy our products on the store shelves, almost made in communist China and other Soviet or communist countries. This gives us the realization that we need to be concerned. The allying of communist China and Russia today. So, with what you're seeing in the news these days, are you seeing ominous directions as we've talked in the past?
Well, let me put it this way. I warned about this on my website. I wrote, I mean, a lot of stuff about this. There's no negotiation or any kind of doing business with communists. It will, you know, when a Christian society wants to lower her standards to sign anything with communists, it will never bring anything good to the Christian society. You know, if I may, and I think this will be. This is old quote, but it should illustrate how the Russian communists had this prepared, this whole strategy prepared long years ago. This is a quote from Dmitry Manuilsky of the Lenin School of Political Warfare, written in 1933. He later became a member of the Security Council of the United Nations. I think he was part of the Russian Soviet delegation in 1949. Let me read this real quick. So, war to the hilt between communism and capitalism is inevitable. Today, of course, we are not strong enough to attack. Our time will come in 30 to 40 years. To win, we shall need the element of surprise. The bourgeoisie will have to be put to sleep. So we shall begin by launching the most spectacular peace movement on record. There will be electrifying overtures and unheard-of concessions. The capitalist countries, stupid and decadent, will rejoice to cooperate in their own destruction. They will leap at another chance to be friends. As soon as their guard is down, we shall smash them with our clenched fist. Well, this is what is happening today. We are in the last phase of this strategy, basically. The long-range plan the Soviets put in place during the Khrushchev era, and I'm sure they worked on it long before that, but the main implication came in during the Khrushchev era, between 56 till 1960. The whole long-range plan is operational, is very much visible in Western Europe, very much visible here in America. We are doing business with people whom we should be cutting our contacts with. Now, we should never sign anything with communist Russia, with Chinese, anything. No negotiation based on the principle that there's no negotiation with criminals, with murderers, with tyrants, oppressors. These people murdered their own people just to stay in power. There's no negotiation or any kind of business association, diplomatic ties, anything with such people. And the fruits of this evil we are basically seeing today. So I mean, it's only going to get worse.
Well, there's the situation. You see Al Qaeda and these terrorist groups that we're chasing, and they had to have been created from somewhere. You've seen this London bombing connection to this. You see that people are anticipating another event in America, and yet our borders have been porous for decades. They allow this to happen. And with what we realize today, and the Homeland Security, Hansa. Homeland Security is a Soviet-style dictatorial system where you have to have passports, internal passports, to go travel where you want to go. That's where ultimately they're going to go with this. When 9/11 happened, I said roadblock engineers would be on the horizon or sunset for us. So with these thoughts in mind, you can see the Sovietization of America, can't you?
Well, in the sense, you know, we are still a little further, but definitely there's, let me put it this way. There are things that are being done that shouldn't be done, and there are things that should be done, and they are not really even talked about, you know. I'm talking about the term, you know, in terms of what are we going to do with the state sponsors of terrorism, which are clearly Russia and China. And the rest of the so-called now democratic and quote formerly communist countries. I did an interview with Mr. Peter Sobotka from Czech Republic, and I'm looking at one of the questions, if I may quote from that, because he's got very good insight. He served altogether 5 years in communist prisons. He was a genuine dissident, held a 31-day hunger strike, and 78, I believe, almost died in communist prison in Czechoslovakia. Served in a hard labor concentration camp, and then he began, and during the 90s, he began to publish an independent newspaper that was later infiltrated by the communists and brought to destruction. Basically, they destroyed it through the distribution problems, but he's got 30 years of experience studying the communist moves and what they've done and studying all kinds of information. So I was very pleased to get acquainted with Mr. Sobotka, and I did 4 interviews with him. And let me quote right here. I asked him, when the communist countries trained the Islamic terrorists, was it or is it understood that after such training, these terrorists would operate independently on the communist strategy and wouldn't be under control of the communist secret services? Is such situation even possible? And his answer is pretty significant. I'm convinced that when the communist parties and governments made such training grounds and Biden-controlled territory available for training of Islamic terrorists, the communists haven't done it selflessly. Communists always train terrorists to further their own communist goals. It is impossible that the communists would give the absolute free will and independence to conduct their terrorist operations against the West to these people and to their organizations, to whom the communists supplied weapons, explosives, training, finances, logistics, and intelligence. The entire strategy of the communist struggle against the West was always carefully coordinated directly by Moscow, and Moscow not only directed her own state terrorist organizations, as the KGB, GRU, the Army, and so on, but also the same organizations in all communist countries and to them connected terrorist networks that are operating all over the world. So my next question was, is the situation the same even today? I'm certain that Moscow has never lost the old connections to world terrorism, and also she has never lost her control over terrorism. When I'll become the chief of the KGB, I gladly supply more information. That was just a joke, what he meant.
Right.
There's no files open in Russia or anywhere in the so-called democratic Eastern Europe. If Russia claims that they are such a friend of us and strategic partners in the war on terror, then we should ask Russia, well, let's open up the files. Let's get the names and data and all information about these terrorist groups that that the communist bloc trained, because you know there's a lot of it. Certain information surfaced last week. There was an article written by this friend of mine, Jeff Nyquist, published by Financial Sense magazine, that deals with the second in command of Al Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. There was a publication in London published by a former KGB officer who escaped. His name is Alexander Litvinenko. He wrote a book about Al Qaeda. He names Ayman al-Zawahiri as an agent of the FSB, Russian Security Services.
All right, keep your thoughts in place, Hansa. Anybody has to question you, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443, a shortened broadcast with Hansa. So stay with us, and if you want to call in, 800-313-9443.com is the website for Hansa Molina, the anti-communistanalyst.com. On the website, AmericanExpose.com, America spelled with a K, on purpose as a statement. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. America with a K, that movie. I hope you've all seen that movie, America with a K, back in 1987. I believe it was produced and set up for us to view one time only. America with a K. Hansa, we left you sort of in the middle of something, and you barely got done with your direction. Continue.
Well, this is nothing unusual. Well, I said basically what I was suspecting a long time ago, based on the knowledge of I shouldn't say knowledge, based on the data that comes from Russia and what the communists are all about. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the second in command of Al Qaeda, was named by KGB defector, now FSB defector, Alexander Litvinenko, in his book and in publications, now published independently in Poland also, as a Russian, long-term Russian agent of the Russian security services. That means that Russia is tied to Al Qaeda. There's also other information that was published by Fox News Channel on October 16, 2001. It comes from a statement from Robert Hansen himself. He was the one uncovered in FBI as a Soviet agent. Basically, Robert Hansen has stolen software, special software called Promise. That is used for government data safekeeping, so they would be out of hands of hackers and other elements, and foreign espionage. And he stole it and gave it to the KGB, and his information was that the KGB supplied it to Al-Qaeda also. Now, that means, they wouldn't just supply it to Arabs, and like I quoted Mr. Sibulka in that interview, they supply it to their agents within Al-Qaeda. Not all Al-Qaeda members are, of course, agents of Russia. They are only the top-level officials of Al-Qaeda. Must be Russian intelligence officers, because then they can spread the propaganda and the deception to the rest of the members, as they themselves are kept on need-to-know basis information level. So it wouldn't be wise for these people to know a lot. This statement is nothing, it's very much substantiated by Mr. Anatoly Golitsyn, who defected from KGB. He brought information that the KGB was in fact split in two sections during the 60s, and that was done on purpose to protect the strategy of Moscow from being uncovered by any foreign intelligence network, Western intelligence, basically. There was intersection of the KGB, which was strategist, and this is actually still in effect, even amended, maybe for the purposes of making it even more workable. And there was intersection of the KGB and the outer section, which were the actual agents and field operatives. The outer section of the KGB had no knowledge of the overall strategy. They were only supplied data and information for the particular operation. Sometimes they were even supplied deception in case these people would be captured. They would supply the wrong information to their captors. So let's say they were captured, they would be captured in America. The CIA would get wrong information, which the Russians would prefer the CIA to have. This is basically what is done. There's of course the Russians always banked on giving the Arab members of the or the Muslims within the Muslim terrorist networks all the data about America being against Muslims. Of course, we can question how come Russia is not named as the bad country when the Russians and Chinese communists murdered a lot of Muslims. We can name Afghanistan, for example, or any other country they infiltrated. And the suppression of the Chinese Muslims within China as a good example also.
Well, think about this Afghanistan situation. Isn't that where Al-Qaeda supposedly came from?
Right, and that's the strategy of Moscow was, that's why they invaded Afghanistan in the first place, because, see, if you think about it, there's nothing in Afghanistan ever was. There's no oil, there's no really interest that could serve the Soviet Union back then in 1980. The only reason why they did was to infiltrate the country and to set up these terrorist networks, and Russia could easily claim that they have nothing to do with it today. So that's why they invaded the country in the first place.
There's a good point of confusion, listeners. That is the point. Russia invaded Afghanistan, and they supposedly lost. Did they really lose, or did they leave a public government in place, a real puppet government to implement these directions that we're living today? Your calls are encouraged if you like. If you have any intelligent questions, 800. Well, stay with us. To the broadcast called American Exposé. My website, AmericanExposé.com, American spelled with a K, is there. On that website is Hans's website, theanticommunistanalyst.com. So back to Afghanistan, and we do have a caller, but back to Afghanistan, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan started in 1979. The precursor to that was the building of roads, according to Abdul Shams from In Cold Blood, the book that I read on the air at one time on the other network. So here we are with them leaving in 1980 or so, them being the Soviet Union, saying that that was their Vietnam, although they lost 15,000 compared to our 58,000 in Vietnam. But did they actually leave Afghanistan, the Soviets, that is? Hansa, what do you think?
Of course not. They set up the communist government of Babrak Karmal in Afghanistan that was guaranteeing that these Russian agents, Soviet agents within the Mujahideen movement were still protected and in place. Today there's one that is already within the inside the newly so-called democratic government of Afghanistan. There's one of them in there, allegedly. Not going to name any names, but of course, the situation in Afghanistan was to set up these terrorist networks that would seem to operate totally independently on Russia. Of course, there's information also that I'm looking at. Afghanistan is very very important to Russia. Let me quote from an article written again by Jeff Nyquist in 2003, I think. Secret and not-so-secret connections exist between leading Mujahideen fighters and Russia's security services. Afghan generals Dostum and Massoud and Fahim have deep ties to Moscow. These are the so-called people that were fighting the Russians, supposedly. So the Russians infiltrated both sides of the fight in order to set up these terrorist networks that would have no visible connection to the Russian government. Let me quote again, other Afghan commanders are also implicated in an apparent double game used to foster the present international terror crisis. This game involved decades of experimentation, false movements, constant political zigzags. That doesn't mean that all the people involved in the scheme know about the true purpose, but as I'm quoting again from the article, it has to be remembered that agents of influence in key leadership bodies can manipulate national politics to serve the strategic ends of enemy states. We can look at the American political scene, for example. Well, now the question is, can we trust Russia? These are Russian weapons in hands of the insurgents in Iraq. These are Russian weapons in the hands of terrorists. These are communist explosives used to further the cause. These are Czechoslovak-made Semtex that brought down, for example, the Pan Am flight. The Semtex is used by, lastly, by Hamas that is tied to the PLO, formerly basically run by KGB officer, KGB general Yasser Arafat. These are networks set up long ago by Russians. In the meantime, the Russian communists can claim by their signature, I repeat, by signature, by signing disarmament treaty, that they're giving up their thirst for world domination. That's only what we have in hand. That's the only claim they have. Basically, that they're giving up. They don't want to continue in their openly communist cause, and that's all they are saying. But the question is, can we trust these people?
Right, and that's the deception that we live today, listeners. Let's take Barney in Maryland. The number to call, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Hello to Barney. How are you?
Yeah, how you doing, Chris?
Fine, thank you.
I was wondering if either one of you gentlemen have read The Committee of 300.
By John Coleman.
Yeah.
Yes.
No,
I think that lays it all out. It tells what happened, what's going to happen, and you can see it all happen. And it tells who all the principal players are.
Uh-huh.
And you can't deny it because you see it coming down all around you, you know what I mean?
Right. Right. So what is your feeling about what's happening around us today?
Well,
is London behind it, or?
I think Queen is, and London is all top player, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And everybody ought to try to get a copy of that book and read it, because it's one of the best books. I've read all the flyers and the pamphlets and newspapers and books I could get a hold of for the past 45 years. Mm-hmm. And they all blend into this, but this is a masterpiece.
Okay, very, very good.
Look it up.
Okay, thank you, Barney.
Great. Bye.
Bye-bye now. The Mujahideen at one time were freedom fighters in the 1970s, and now they're terrorists. I have that book here, Hansa, in cold blood. I found it again by Abdul Shams. And we keep forgetting that the Soviets during that time were dropping toys out of helicopters that would explode when children picked them up, maiming the children in Afghanistan. The Soviets did this. Soviet-style disarmament. It's right here in the book.
Well, that's nothing new. In 1968, I have this information when they invaded the Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
They came to this town. About 20,000 people lived in there. And the people didn't have no weapons. So in order to hamper the Russian movement, the tanks, they took all the street signs off and all the road signs off. So the Russians couldn't find them. You know, in European towns, it's much more difficult. It's not like American towns. They're wide open, and you can find your way out of there. So the Russians started circling the tanks around the city square, the main square, and started shooting the people. And they killed entire kindergarten class, 20-plus children, the two female teachers. Without remorse, they just used a machine gun and murdered all of them just because they couldn't find their way out of the town. This is the real face of Russian friendship, as far as what they have in mind. So, and Czechoslovakia back then was friendly to Soviet Union. So, imagine what they will do to us. When they implement their strategy against America. I'm looking at the article. The Russians want to be seen also with the terrorism problem. That's really what is the main situation here.
Yeah.
There was a report, and according to Mr. Nyquist, I'm reading from the article. There was a report published in Russian Novaya Gazeta. There was a secret meeting in the summer of 1999 between Yeltsin, Chief of Staff Alexander Voloshin, and Shamil Basayev in France. Shamil Basayev is the leader of the Chechen Mafia. So this is the tie between the Russian government and the Chechen Mafia. Voloshin wanted Basayev to help Moscow to start a small war in Chechnya. This means that the Russians were interested in setting up war on their own territory and to present to the world this deception that Russia also has terrorism problem. Shamil Basayev is former Red Army paratrooper. He was trained as a paratrooper. He also was recruited as an agent alongside with his brother. They were both recruited as agents by the main intelligence directorate of the Russian General Staff, which is the Russian Intelligence Service, GRU.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the Russian general, I can't pronounce the first name, the last name is Dudayev, Johar Dudayev, commander of Soviet Air Force Regiment, was very active in Afghanistan during the 1980s. Dudayev would later become a born-again Muslim, which is laughable, as well as president of, quote-unquote, independent Chechnya. So a Russian general who was in charge of murdering Muslims in Afghanistan during the 80s became the president of the independent Chechnya. Dudayev later, this is very interesting, Dudayev later was allegedly assassinated. But the body was never found.
Oh.
That means,
new identity, huh?
No, it was never found. So, this situation in Chechnya was also exploited by the Russians to the vast extent to Eastern Europe membership of in NATO. Because at the same time, the Russians, this is according to Anatoly Gurkin, I agree with his assessment, within the time when they started this this operation in Chechnya, they were producing films and documentaries about Chechnya and newscasts about Chechnya, how the Russians are fighting. And at the same time, the Eastern European countries were making connections with the Western officials of NATO, and they were trying to say that since they are democratic, they tried to protect themselves from Russia and join the NATO. But this was strategy the Russians had in mind to infiltrate the NATO by their trusted agents.
Mm-hmm.
I documented this in the case of Czech Republic. Most of, if not all of the military intelligence is still come. They are still the same people that were there before. There was a scandal actually involving the Czech Republic membership in NATO when the Czech delegation was secretly distributing NATO classified documents to Russia.
Mm.
And so we can see how this works. So big mistake done by the NATO to allow these communist countries inside the NATO, because this means only the destruction of NATO. And as far as our own protection against communism, this whole operation undermines the whole effort. And we are really, America is left by herself, as far as I'm concerned.
And once again, NATO in their charter say they uphold the principles of the United Nations. The United Nations set up under the guise of the Soviet system, the Soviet Constitution, and so you see all this connecting of the communist United Nations system today. And the fall of communism was done for our deceived purpose to accept. And let's take another call. We have a couple more callers, Hans. I know you're on a limited schedule today. 800-313-9.
I'm fine, Chris. I'm fine.
Okay, so let's take Daryl in Pennsylvania. Daryl, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Chris and Hansa. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Where's Hans originally from?
Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia, okay. I spent 26 years in the intel community, 20 of that in the Air Force and Army Intelligence, and I agree 100% on all the points you've been making, and communism in Russia definitely is not dead, never was dead since the time of Stalin and Lenin and those boys. And I know several missionaries that were over there when they had their staged coup. And interestingly, all of the top-level communists kept all the key positions in internal security and within the military, which is in any place where you have a communist regime where they claim to be sharing power with anybody, they always maintain those key positions until they can fully oust anybody that they're sharing power with, and I don't think they ever shared any power there. China and the Soviet Union, I had heard somebody saying that, where you guys had mentioned that they're the biggest supporters of terrorism, and certainly for the past 4 to 5 decades they have been. I had heard a radio interview with some guy that was advocating bombing Iran because they support terrorism, and using that same yardstick, when you guys agree that, boy, then we ought to go after Russia and Red China, especially the former Soviet Union, where they trained a lot of Palestinian terrorist groups and that would come up to Moscow and other areas to train. And I'm sure Hans is aware of that. Am I correct?
Well, of course. As a matter of fact, I was a member of the division when I served in Czechoslovak Air Force. We were training people from Libya and from the communist regime of Angola to learn to fly the MiGs. They were not necessarily terrorists, but they were, I mean, they could be used as terrorists over there. They got the training. I wasn't involved directly in the training, but I was aware of this was happening, because the division belonged to the College of Aviation, basically by the Military Defense Council. So that was basically, we were training our pilots, but we had these people also. Of course, they were kept aside from us, but I've seen on some occasions black people, which we didn't have back then, not speaking Czech language, African-looking people, and also Middle Easterners. So this was a known fact back then, and of course, there were Libyans studying on our military academies back then. Of course, people from Middle East, from Palestine, from the PLO. Yasser Arafat was taking turns with Gaddafi. Every 3 months they were in Czechoslovakia, hugging our leaders, our communist leaders, and getting all the explosives, you know, all the military equipment and all that, what they required. I mean, I've seen them. We've seen them on our national TV. I remember that very well. So you're absolutely correct, sir. The question is, today, there are cases when these countries sell weaponry and machine guns, as far as basically information from Czech Republic, that they sold machine guns to Hamas and about 2 million rounds of ammunition to Hamas. They always create somebody with criminal record who's supposedly behind this operation, and always in the background is some kind of former, quote-unquote, military or civilian intelligence officer from the communist era.
Okay, stay with us. We'll be back to continue. Daryl, if you have more, stay with us. Listeners, we're about to wrap up this hour. Daryl, Paul, stay with us. Hans is going to be with us a little while longer. I want to cover in cold blood the communist conquest of Afghanistan by Abdul Shams, who was economic advisor to the president of Afghanistan. Everyone was a president for our consumption and our dumbing down process, in my opinion. But it states in here, between 1950 and 1960, Afghanistan had become heavily dependent on the Soviet Union, 100% for armaments, 90% for petroleum and petroleum products, and nearly 50% for all international trade. The economic, political, and military stages in the conquest of Afghanistan, while they can be distinguished, should not be separated. The three stages proceeded simultaneously with varying emphasis. One ought not be deluded, as the Afghan government was, into thinking that the Soviets have no plan for world dominion. They do, and nearly every action they take is in accordance with that plan. Their relationship with Afghanistan was not a benevolent one. They knew from the beginning that Afghanistan must be conquered. And they took steps from the beginning to ensure that their economic influence would contribute to their control and military occupation. The government of Afghanistan did not understand that in the 1950s and 1960s, but looking back now, one can see the cunning of the Soviets, even when they appeared to be most altruistic. Let me give you specific examples of what I mean. The border control agreement signed in January 18, 1958, contained a provision, Article 21, that permitted both the Soviet Union and Afghanistan to inspect the bridges linking the two countries. If Afghanistan wanted to mine the bridges to prevent a Soviet invasion, it would have been discovered almost immediately by the communists. A bridge-building agreement signed in July 1959 specified that three new bridges would be built across the Bushta, Kami, and Ajmer rivers in Afghanistan by Afghan laborers supervised by Soviet engineers. The load capacity for these bridges was nearly four times as great as the largest civilian Afghan truck, and large enough to support the weight of the heaviest battle tank in the Red Army. The third example is the network of roads built in Afghanistan by both the Soviets and the Americans in the 1950s and 1960s. A major segment of the highway system was built from the Afghanistan-USSR border at Kushta to Herat and Kandahar, where it joined the U.S.-built highway in Kabul. The road system certainly would permit the rapid movement of the Red Army troops from the Soviet Union to Pakistan or Iran, as Khrushchev said, but it has done far more. It provided the route for the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan itself in December 1979 and January 1980. Between 1961 and 1967, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers supervised the construction of more than 500 miles of roads in Afghanistan funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. Most of the U.S.-built roads ran east to west and were designed to be links in a vast trans-Asian highway stretching from Turkey to Vietnam. The cost of the road building program to the U.S. was $80 million. a little bit more on this, and we'll continue with Hans and Molina, and we'll bring Daryl back and Paul in Florida, and your calls, 800-313-9443. The setup is obviously in place, listeners. We've been deceived. Stay with us.